You got a bad attitude, man.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode, Season 1, Episode 2, Friends and Lovers. And now, your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Shall we discuss Friends and Lovers, the very imaginatively named second episode of this show?
How is it this boring already? Like, do we need to do an Amanda countdown? Because I'm feeling like we do.
It's
boring.
Grim. Yeah. Watching this, you're like, how did this get to a season two? Because shall we get into the reasons why that is the case?
Yes. Let us do so.
Starting with our B plot, Jane and Michael are married and boring, but Billy has a clinger. Allison and Billy still aren't totally clicking as roommates. She hates how strong he makes the coffee and that he is reading her paper before she gets it, which, to be fair, is really annoying. I'm with her on that, especially if he's not paying for it, which I assume he's not. He wants a job to replace his gig at Arthur Murray. Searching the classifieds because it's the past. Allison is also stressed out about Hal, the guy who sexually harassed her and then threatened to get her fired, which I guess makes it aggravated sexual harassment. But Billy naively says that Hal can't get her fired when he probably totally could if he wanted to, and further advises that she show Hal she's not going to back down either, and to threaten legal action as if he hasn't noticed that the one job that no one in the complex does is free lawyer of all specialties, unlike Matt on 90210. This really is a gap in the complex, I have to say.
Yeah, it's true.
Meanwhile, Michael is still a very tired doctor. Can I just break in here and say, I'll just confess it with some embarrassment. I really think Thomas Calabro is cute. He has such bad hair this season, and I'm sure it doesn't really get much better because the men in the 90s didn't have good hair. But he's really cute to me.
He is very cute in this incarnation. Like, he, I think, like, prior to becoming a villain, put on like 25 pounds. And he definitely changed his hair, so he stops being cute. But at this point, when you're still supposed to kind of think he's a good guy, mm-hmm. he is cute. And his hair is bad, but it looks very soft and touchable.
It does. It does. And considering where we are in the 90210 chronology right now with the crispy hairs of David Silver, that is appealing.
Yes, indeed.
So Jane is still trying to recapture the magic of their carefree youth together or something. Remembering that he once fixed a broken heel on her shoe by just breaking off the heel on the other shoe, which was when she knew she was in love with him. And then he tells her to call in sick, and she just straight ignores him. He's like, call in sick, presumably so they can, like, fuck. And she, like, just blows past this, does not even acknowledge it, to ask when he knew he was in love with her, and he kind of deflates and then can't remember when he knew he was in love, and she gets all pissy at him for forgetting when he is the one who should be pissy at her for blowing off his suggestion that they both stay home today, but whatever, she is pissed.
And also for wearing that terrible blouse, which was, like, distractingly bad. Like, if I were him and it's like, when was the moment for you? And I'd be like, I really can't even talk to you if you're going to wear that.
Seriously.
I can tell you the moment I fell out of love with you. It's
when
right
he started
now.
Shopping at Chico's.
Take that shit off. Yeah, totally.
So Allison then has to confront Hal at her desk at the agency. She breathlessly says she's considered all her options with regard to his sexual harassment,
which,
the serious way of saying it, I guess. And that if it means losing her job, so be it. And he makes a very unimpressed face. And then tries to jolly her along by reframing the incident as they went on a date. But when she says he knows it was more than that, he sniffs that she should do what she wants. And it turns out that a certain Libby in payroll filed charges against Hal. So according to Allison's nameless coworker, Hal's dead. I don't know. We'll see. In our current day, that's not necessarily the case. I'm pretty sure it wasn't in the early 90s either, but...
I'm pretty sure it is too, but if this is the writer signaling that they just didn't even want to get into that and like off screen, they were like, well, that problem's taken care of. Bye.
Yeah.
Fine with it.
Fair enough. So then the coworker says that Allison's cab is there, which when she goes outside, we see is driven by Billy. His job driving it will earn him double what he made at the dance studio. Again, the past. He had hoped to celebrate this weekend. And of course, responsible Allison had planned on painting the apartment. Not how renting works usually, but sure, go nuts. And Billy, the golden retriever, is just as happy to do that. He remembers to ask her about Hal. She says it worked itself out. And then Billy gets a call and off he goes. And so he stops to pick up his fare and gets out of the car to discuss the address that she's headed to and open her door. Like, you're not going to make good money if you are this solicitous. Like, get on with it.
Yeah, really.
So this broad's name is Marcy. She is played by Jensen Daggett, who was a journeywoman, girlfriendy guest star in the 90s that I personally know from playing a fake Grace in a play that Jack wrote in season one of Will and Grace. Kill me. Why do I know this? Sorry. So she kind of looks like an off-brand Deborah Messing, except prettier. Anyway, Billy is, of course, the kind of cab driver that you dread, as we hear in clip two.
You're flown into L.A., right?
Yeah.
Well, of course, because everybody has, because nobody really is from L.A. It's just all those lights, you know, mile after mile. I just keep thinking, for every one of those lights, you got 50 people living down there side by side. For each one of those people, they only know 30 or 40 people. So you got 6 million virtual strangers. But the thing is, they like it that way. That's the thing I don't get. I mean, am I talking too much?
Yes! Shut up!
Yeah, Jesus.
But
also, for, you know, future scholars of a Jersey accent, that's it. That's all it is. Occasionally, that's all. Like, every now and then, you get, like, a little central Jersey, like, tweak. Aww. In there that I'm like, oh, hey, buddy.
Anyway, somehow Marcy the idiot thinks that Billy is brilliant. He calls Los Angeles a whole city that's afraid of commitment, and she leaps out of the back seat to get into the passenger seat beside him and tell him he looks exactly like Bruce Springsteen. What? Like, no, not no. At any point in his career.
No. Although I kind of want now to see Andrew Hsu in like the mid 70s, like velvet, crushed velvet suit and pimp hat with no shirt rig. Not least because it would sort of cast a shadow over the mouth breathing face. Oh.
Anyway, they find out they once went to the same Springsteen show and the idiot meet cute cannot be stopped in clip three.
I was 10th row field.
Oh, 12th row. We were just
2 rows apart.
That close.
It's incredible. We could have, like,
danced in the aisles together.
This is crazy. This might be a little out of line, but I know a great Italian place up on Mulholland.
I love Italian.
How did I know that?
Everyone loves Italian.
Jesus.
Hey, come on, move it.
The light's green.
Is it?
The music cues. There's so many of these clips that are long because the music cues like made me laugh so much. That is such off-brand Midnight Run scoring. Oh my god.
And oh, they're trying so hard to be like, this is hilarious. Life of the city, are we right?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not.
No. No, but alas, it is not going to end. Stupid Billy ends up bringing Marcy back to the apartment. She tells him it's not what she expected, and he neglects to say that's probably because his female roommate decorated it, and he's barely been there. There's some uncharming banter, but they almost immediately end up on the futon making out, which is when Allison walks in with a shitload of painting stuff. Both Allison and Billy quickly assure Marcy that they're strictly platonic roommates, and the conversation then turns on how Marcy and Billy met and Allison's narrow-eyed suspicion about all of it until she finally offers to leave for a few hours so they can have the place to themselves. But Marcy suggests instead that Billy give her a tour and they head off to his bedroom. And Allison ends the scene on an over-the-top disgust take, which I gift and you can see in our visual aids.
I have a couple of questions.
Please.
First of all, mm-hmm. There is a bowl of fruit, including strawberries, on the mantle. Why is there a mantle? Why are the strawberries there? Why is this franchise of, like, why is this pair of shows obsessed with people eating sex berries? It's really annoying.
Yep.
In California, they call them mantle berries for a reason.
Mantle berries. Oh, the elusive mantle berry.
Ricardo Mantle. Mantle berries.
Mantle berries.
Rich Corinthian strawberries.
The plane. Also, couldn't Allison just go in her room and close the door and put music on or watch television like a fucking adult?
Yeah.
But who wants to paint? No one.
Yeah, seriously. So later, Allison is prepping to paint. Well, I wish I could remember all the steps from Mark on Playing House, but I can't. Step, paint, prep, clean, whatever.
Wipe.
Tape. Wipe.
Tape.
Right.
Trim.
Anyway.
Wipe. Paint. I have a mug with this on it that you bought me, but I'm not drinking out of it right now. I bought the same one for John Ramos. So, John Ramos, tell us the order.
Yeah. Anyway, she's doing all of that while Marcy giggles down the hall before the noises escalate to extremely loud making out, interrupted by Marcy's claims that this isn't like her. And Allison creeps down the hall to eavesdrop, which is where Billy finds her standing when he opens the door. Looking, again, I hate it when he is not unattracted to me because he's so dumb, but... when he's, like, slightly tussled, he looks cute. I'm sorry. No agreement. Moving on.
The hair is a serious, serious problem.
Well, yes. It's very mid-90s hair, for sure.
Yeah.
They both agree that the walls are pretty thin before Allison marches Billy into the kitchen to hiss at him that he's nuts, he just met this woman, etc. Clip 4.
I mean, are you going to...
If you're referring to condoms, I am, yeah. I mean, I have, and I always do.
No, I am not referring to condoms. My God!
Billy!
We're bothering you, I can tell. My God.
You are not bothering me.
You're bright red. Look at you.
Look, I don't want to discuss this.
What is the problem, Allison? I mean...
There is no problem. I thought we were going to paint.
I know. And I'm sorry... Maybe I can help you tomorrow.
Forget it. It's okay. Look, somehow keep it down.
Oh, sure.
Who's the guy in that clip?
Andrew Hsu.
Okay. Billy. Andrew Hsu sounds like he is at any moment about to break into a vaudevillian joke routine with that voice. Yeah. He does not look the part, but that voice, it sounds like, you know, he's about to say something. Honk, honk.
No, he kind of looks the part. This scene is like, everything about it is incorrectly built. Like, if she really wants not to talk about it, she will go somewhere else in the apartment. Like, why are they standing so close together? Why are they not jumping each other's lines? Did, like, an ad drop out and they had to use all these long takes that are filled with dead air? Oh, it's just deadly. It's deadly.
Yeah. But also, like, initially it was framed like, I don't know what it's, I've never lived with a guy before, he's such a guy, blah, blah, blah. But, like, she has lived with a roommate before. Like, presumably, the departed Natalie used to bring guys home. Like, we know she definitely at least fucked Jake. Like, was this never an issue before? Why are you such a weirdo? Please get laid for the sake of the community, Allison. I am begging you.
Yeah, really.
So the next morning, Marcy is still there, schmooping all over Billy in the kitchen and then asking to use Allison's deodorant, which I hope is spray because otherwise gross. And as soon as she's gone, Allison starts nosing around, but Billy says they didn't fuck and cheerfully adds that they need to talk about the feelings Allison is having about this. And you can kind of see how much more effective this banter might have been if they had cast anyone charming or talented as Billy. Like, you can tell what they're trying to do, but he's so bad that they can't get there.
Yeah, he's
anyway.
Yeah. I mean, there are times when it kind of passes all the way through and back around to charming because it's so inept.
Uh-huh.
But this is not one of those times. So let's move on.
Yeah. So Allison sputters a denial about her feelings, but Marcy interrupts with a grapefruit that Allison has labeled nice continuity from last week.
True.
And Allison goes to get her paint, which she intends to exchange. And Marcy and Billy have more dumb flirty talk as she tries to make him guess what she does for a living in clip 5.
Teacher.
Better.
Lawyer.
Oh, please. Allison, go on, jump in here.
Okay. Astronaut. Brain surgeon?
Tycoon? Tycooness?
Dental student.
Wow. God.
I'll be at the paint store.
Astronaut was some pretty good shade.
Yeah. I'll be at the paint store is my new exit line, by the way. So that night, Marcy is in a totally other outfit, lighting a shitload of candles when Allison comes in, having apparently spent the entire day at the paint store. Marcy thought that she was Billy because he's out getting groceries to make Marcy dinner. And I don't think I want to eat anything made by a guy who lived with his mom until last week. But good luck, Marcy. But then again, Marcy might just be an idiot because one of the candles she lit is standing on a can of paint, which Allison has to tell her is flammable. Marcy starts babbling again about how out of character all of this is for her. But when she saw Billy, it was instant attraction. And she sits Allison down and demands a full briefing on him. And Allison, like, pressing herself as far away from Marcy as she can and still be on the futon, says she hasn't known Billy long enough to be very helpful. So then Marcy shifts into suspicion about how protective Allison seems to be of Billy, considering the shortness of their acquaintance. But then Billy returns and Marcy's all over him immediately. And suddenly he thinks they should eat later. Get it? So they can fuck, you guys. So then at least a whole day and most of a night have passed when we see Jane and Michael again. So when he says that she shouldn't still be this angry about his forgetting the whole when they fell in love thing, he is correct. But of course, this isn't really about him forgetting when he fell in love with her. It's symptomatic of other problems in their marriage. And if the romance in their relationship is already dead, they should be terrified, she thinks. But they can put their shit on hold because then Allison comes storming in to rant about her shit to the Mancinis, who point out that she is being ridiculous. She claims her issue is that she thought she and Billy could be friends, but she hates being treated as if she's not even there, and then asks if she can stay at the Mancinis that night. Like, you have your own room. Go in it and close the door. Why do we have to keep telling you this?
They actually have those little, like, construction earplug thingies at the paint store.
Yeah.
In case you need them to, like, drill something. So get a pair of those.
Yeah.
Also get a vibrator. Like, just sit on the paint stirrer for like 15 minutes, please.
That's a pretty good idea, actually. So Sunday.
Making a note.
Sunday is another cookout by the pool. I seriously do not know where Marcy's clothes are coming from, but now she's in a bikini top and cutoffs trying to get Allison to give her and Billy the apartment on Friday. And Billy is watching Marcy work the room when Jane comes over to try and map her problems onto his in clip six.
Remember this time. Because everything that happens, you gotta etch it into your memory. Falling in love is the single most greatest experience a man or woman ever can have.
You think this is love?
I mean, I'll start to say something.
What else?
Shut up, Jane.
Also, wait, what day is it?
It's Sunday.
In their timeline, it's Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
Okay. Yeah, they met on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. But as Billy hears Marcy telling Rhonda how Billy sleeps with his socks on and what a good thing it is that his bed has such strong springs, he clearly thinks it's something other than love and starts bitching to Allison about how much Marcy's up in his business. And Allison says she's the most aggressive woman she's ever met. And he doesn't disagree, but denies that he thinks that he needs Allison to rescue him from Marcy, which she wasn't offering to do. But as she walks off, he hears Marcy telling Sandy and Rhonda very detailed stories of them having sex. And that sends him into a reverie, starring the actual Dr. Ruth talking about women who can't get enough with Marcy as her guest. And because it's Billy's fantasy, Marcy is just telling Dr. Ruth how amazing Billy is at doing sex. Like, poor Dr. Ruth, she deserves better.
She really does.
Than this. And Billy is in such a daze that he doesn't notice the grill in front of him is blazing. So dumb stuff. Speaking of dumb, Michael, in the middle of trying to fix something in his capacity as the building manager, looks up to see Jane in their doorway in her robe, bitterly saying goodnight. This is much later. It's very dumb still. More dumb, Billy reading himself into a nature documentary about an aggressive spider killing her mate. We get it. I promise we get it. Like, yeah, honestly.
Really?
So Marcy comes in trying to feed him something. He remembers that she has an exam the next day, and she eye rolls that she hasn't even studied. And he encourages her to do that now, but she would apparently rather fuck. And he has some writing he was going to get to. LOL. And she tells him to go ahead. She'll just sit there and watch him. No thanks.
Ew. But
it gets worse. Clip 7.
You have the rest of your life to be a writer, and I have the rest of my life to be a dentist. Billy? I think I love you.
Stuff.
So the next morning, of course, Marcy is still there, and Billy doesn't know how to get rid of her now that she's said she loves him. Allison says, of course, Marcy's in love with him since he invited her into his life. But they met on Friday, and it's Monday. Even if they've spent every second together in all that time, this is not normal. None of what Marcy is doing is reasonable, and Allison is wrong to say Billy should have expected this outcome.
Yeah. I don't.
But they.
I also think that, like, we're supposed to think that now, like, it should be Monday night, mm-hmm. but they seem to be acting like it's still Sunday night. We'll get to it.
Anyway, they can't discuss it further because Marcy needs a towel. And then Billy comes back from Shooters to Marcy draping herself all over him and refusing to hear him as he says they need to talk. Like, surely even she knows what that means. But finally, she shuts up long enough for him to say this is all going too fast for him. She insists that she really does know she loves him, but when he says he doesn't feel the same way, we learn that she does this shit all the time, blames herself, and apologizes to him, and that's a wrap on Marcy. Thank God. She was annoying.
I mean, yeah, she was bad, but I love how only on TV is this considered hilarious mm-hmm. when she's probably suffering from some kind of mood disorder and needs some help, and also
or love addiction or something.
Yeah. Or, and then she's just like, oh, there I go again. Talk to you later. And that's it. She's checked and that's it. Okay. Yep. I mean, I'm not going to complain because annoying. And also that hairdo in her last scene.
Oh yeah. Oh. It's a real tight French twist. Also apologizing Jane for being a real jerk to Michael for 3 days. He doesn't want to lose the romance either, so they agree they just won't. And as she wanders around making dinner in a sweatshirt and his boxers, which I don't hate her style, but I've also been married for 700 years. Michael in glasses, also not unhot. Sorry, again. I know he turns into a real shit, but at this point he's just like a boring husband and he's cute.
Those glasses are like super early 90s and terrible, and I can attest because I had them. He took that pair off my face, basically. Mm-hmm. I still would.
I had them too. So then Jane starts reacting before Michael remembers that there actually was a moment, and he remembers that in clip 8.
I mean, it's every time I'm with you and every time I'm not. It's having the secret. Not the kind you want to run out and tell everybody, but the kind you don't dare tell anyone. Because then a piece of it would be lost forever. If there was a moment that I fell in love with you, it wasn't just one moment, but every moment, every day, falling in love with you over and over, and being scared to death that someday I might lose you, that you'd be gone. Stop me before I make a fool of myself.
No, please.
We get it. Except we kind of don't. Like, his affairs are revealed fairly quickly, so remember this when he's climbing Kimberly Shaw like she's a climbing wall.
Oh, dear. So with Marcy taken care of, finally Allison and Billy can paint. Billy tells Allison it's over between him and Marcy and snorts that Allison knew it wouldn't last, but she says she was afraid it would. And they agree to try to talk to each other like friends, and the episode ends in a classic 90210-esque way. Clip 9.
What a weekend.
No kidding.
I'm
extend one line earlier, guys. This is not necessary.
Yeah. It's really not. It reminds me of those act outs that 90210 used to do on Shannon Doherty, just like scheming and just going through every possible, like, I've had an idea. I'm working through the idea. The idea is a great one. Oh, wait, here's even more of the idea. Wink, smirk.
Yep.
Cut.
On to the A plot. Jake's got adult problems Kelly can't understand. First of all, he has a problem with the shower and stalks in his towel over to complain to Michael, which, by the way, no one is complaining about.
No.
Jake in a towel. He is hot as hell.
Jane may have done this on purpose. Team Jane.
Yeah. What I was not expecting when we decided to start covering the show is how lascivious I would feel about, like, every guy on it. They really stacked this cast with good-looking dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. Matters do not get worse either.
Excellent. I mean, all I was thinking about when they showed Jake in just his towel is, like, there's got to be a storyline where his hotness plus his money problems combine and he ends up doing sex work. Like, that has to happen, right?
It may.
Okay.
A lot of shit happened. Yeah. Almost everyone ends up doing sex work on the show at some point.
Right. Anyway, Michael is not here for Jake's complaints, for saying that Jake isn't really mad about the plumbing, and then that since Jake is out of work, maybe he should just fix it, which, again, this is also not how renting works. Gay Matt, in his one scene, keeps Michael and Jake from coming to blows, and Jane intensely tells Jake they'll handle it, and God, Sandy comes out to see what the kerfuffle is about in this completely ridiculous baby doll nightie, which you can see in the visual aids. And tries to commiserate with Jake in clip 10.
People like us, we land on our feet.
Did your daddy tell you that?
That's something I found out all by myself.
I gotta get out of here. Can't keep the unemployment office waiting.
Well, stop by Shooters later. I'll buy you a beer.
I'll let you.
Just wanted to note the many accents of the American South. Present brought to you by the pride of Teaneck.
Yep.
Amy Locane.
Girl. I think Trenton, but yes. Same diff, probably.
Who cares?
Indeed. Sandy has just finished showing her headshot options to her washed up actress boss at Shooters when Kelly rolls up full of compliments. First, she says she's there to tell Jake that Jackie had her baby, like he gives a shit. And she also just says, like, Jackie had her baby, like, does Sandy know who Jackie is? What any of this? Whatever. Then she says she and Jake were supposed to have lunch, so then that was actually her telling Sandy that Jackie had her baby. Whatever. Sandy tells Kelly that Jake went to the unemployment office so he might be a while. Kelly knows how that is, and then shadily corrects herself that, of course, Kelly has no idea how that is, and Kelly feels like a baby. And makes a bitchy face, which you can see in the visual aids. At said unemployment office, Jake learns he has wasted a lot of time waiting to be told he didn't fill out his whole form and has to submit it again, and is aghast, but, like, surely this is not your first time doing this, son. Look at both sides. Come on now. Then he ends up in line behind a Latina woman with a baby whose check was sent to the wrong place, and she'll have to wait for it to be mailed even though through the proper channels, even though the check is, like, right there on site. And she is played by Lucy Vargas, who was the sweatshop tipster from St. Donna's season 8 arc on 90210. See her again in the visual aids.
Poor woman.
Yeah. She's the one who could, like, speak a little English. That one. Jake tries to speak up for this woman, but the counter guy, who, as Sarah says in her file name for the pictures, a civil servant skullet, does not care.
Which shows evidence of having been dyed. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really committed to the hair he has left.
Yep.
Good luck to you.
He's trying hard. Kelly walks in just in time for Jake to pluck the check off of the counter. Like, I know about bureaucracy, but no government would be this ridiculous about sticking to it if it's like, here's your check, but no, we have to mail it to you. Like, presumably she had ID, whatever. So Jake starts a brawl, and honestly, he has a point, but then he sees that Kelly's there and has no idea why, and orders her to stay out of it as he is dragged off by security. And when we see Kelly next, she's finding out her credit card is over the limit, and therefore she can't bail Jake out unless she goes to a bail bondsman. bondsman, which she already tried, but she doesn't have collateral. And when she asks the desk cop whether she doesn't think $1,000 is kind of high for his bail, this happens. Clip 11.
Mr. Hansen created the disturbance in a state agency. You're lucky it's not five, considering the priors.
Priors? What are those?
Prior arrests. Your boyfriend's led a colorful life.
The bass guitar of a colorful life.
God.
Also, like, I love Kelly trying to get this woman to agree with her. Like, yes, it is too high. No, Kelly, you're not going to bargain this one down.
It's not we're not horse trading here, but good try.
Yeah. So the next morning, Jake staggers through the jail reception area only to be immediately set upon by Kelly, who is apologizing for how long it took, but explaining that she had to wait for the bank to open. And he says this, clip 12.
You bailed me out?
Well, yeah.
Look. You shouldn't have got involved.
I had to. You were in trouble.
When are you going to understand? I'm no good for you.
Jake, I don't care, okay?
We're from different worlds.
Look, I understand you. I know how you're feeling.
I'll pay you back as soon as I can.
This is like the most true moment on this on either of these shows. I know I keep saying this, but like Kelly being ridiculous and just being like, yeah, I know, but I don't care that you're bad for me. Like, that's the truest thing that anyone has ever done or said on this show.
Yep.
Too bad she's going to have to go.
So Steve ends up at the cookout. Kelly nowhere to be found. Just Steve by himself, drooling over Sandy's headshots while she brags about studying acting with Charles Nelson Reilly. He tries to get her out to a party at the beach club, but she is incredulous that he thinks she would go to a high school party. And then we see in a long shot, he is standing there in a swimsuit with socks and sneakers. He's like beachside Jerry Seinfeld at this cookout. He looks fucking ridiculous. Obviously, you can see this in the visual aids. Like, it's a shame, but like, get some flip-flops, my man. Jesus.
Oh my God. This is definitely the era of like, there's just too much Steve happening. Like the tank top that is basically like a, you know, a bandana that goes between his pepperoni nipples and then sort of attaches on
and,
the side.
And like, is cropped also to show his,
like,
his
why
navel.
Is the, and it's a sweatshirt. It's made from a sweatshirt. Like, why is this garment? And then the dolphin shorts. That it's like, if you frame by frame it, you're like, am I going to see little Steve? What do I want to happen here? Because proper coverage is not going to be on the list. It's like, why bother?
Can I just say, since I'm objectifying people, that Ian Ziering, who I follow on Instagram, because obviously, of course I do, was at an Ice Cube show this weekend, and he like put up a picture of himself. He looks so good. He looks so much better now than he did then. It's shocking.
I mean, look, there's some miles on the odometer, but I think most of us do.
Uh-huh.
Because the early 90s were cruel. Just so
really
cruel.
Were. Yeah. Oh, man. Anyway, he's also getting into like whatever Swamp Thing character he's playing. So my man's working out. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, moving on.
The pride of West Orange.
Exactly. Wow. Jersey well represented in this episode.
Yeah.
So that night, Jake comes home from somewhere to see Michael working on the plumbing. Jake can tell it's more than Michael or his tools are going to be able to handle. Not a euphemism, but he has a pipe cutter. Also not a euphemism in his apartment. And I guess Michael didn't call a plumber because as the manager, he would have to pay for it. But if you can't fix shit, don't try. Just saying. None of this is in the in the text. I'm just reading into it why he's trying to do this himself. Anyway.
I forgot to note this earlier, but I will take a quick sidebar to say that Allison and Billy's painting technique is enraging.
It's terrible. Mm-hmm. Agree. Anyway, Jake apologizes for yelling at Michael the other day, but sometimes he doesn't know how to handle things, and some cliches ensue in clip 13.
Well, got a lot of friends around here, Jake. Needing help, asking for it, that's not something to be ashamed of.
Well, where I come from, you pull your own weight.
And when you're backed into a corner, you fight. We come from the same place, man.
Where's the Ted Blake?
It's so funny, too. Like, they are being extremely mysterious about Jake's past because, in my opinion, they don't know what it is yet. So they're just being like, well, he has sort of undefined anger issues and got arrested for some stuff. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, since we are noting where everyone is from, I will say that these actors are not from the same place. Thomas Calabro is from Brooklyn and Grant Shao is from Detroit. In case you're writing a book. So,
which we might be.
Well, five who years knows? Time. Who knows what the future may bring? Kelly, Donna, and David head out of the Taylor manse to visit Jackie at the hospital, where she somehow still is after several days, which is not standard operating procedure in the past. Even with Jackie being a geriatric mother, there was no problems with her delivery. She would be out of there, just saying. But just then, Jake motorcycles into the driveway, and Donna and David aren't sure how to look, so they both just look dumb, and you can see that in the visual aids. Kelly goes over, and Jake gives her an envelope containing $200. He will give her the rest as soon as he can, and they have this exchange in clip 14.
I just want to even the score.
I was helping you.
And now you want something that means. In return.
Wrong. I could care less. You know, you're the one who's always making such a big deal about me being the kid here. Now, you're the one who's acting like it. Just take your money. Let's just go.
I had to leave that one long so you could hear the terrible music plus the moody motorcycle.
Oh, Jesus.
The farting cycle.
Yes.
So bad.
So dumb. So
yeah, and Jake also, where is the money? Like, look, I'm a writer. I need to know where that money landed so that I could drop by and just pick it up, buy myself some juice. Like, yeah, if no one also, cares about it.
Yeah, I also was under the impression that, like, he is super broke. Like, does he have $200 extra dollars to come over to Kelly's and make this gesture? Like, he has to know she doesn't give a shit about getting the money back. Like, just continue ghosting her and never pay it back. Like, I mean, you know, don't actually do this. Obviously, settle your debts. But in this situation, if he's also trying to get rid of her, like, this would be a pretty easy way.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jake ends up at Shooters, where else, where Billy tries to get Jake to tell him it's okay for him to shiv Marcy, basically. And Jake says this.
Subject is women. I know you've been in this situation. You meet a girl, things develop, you sleep with her, she falls in love with you. Now you're stuck. I mean, you like her, but you're not in love with her. I've been basically avoiding her. The guy thing to do.
Usually. Wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, but if it works.
Oh, hey, hiding that's great. You know, hanging, listening to some music, picking up on strangers. It's really cool. It's not a solution, man.
Yeah, but it works for you.
You tell me what is working in my life right now. You know, guys do this macho thing, you know, put up this false front. Hey, I'm cool. I can handle anything. You know what's happening? Not being straight with people. If this girl's crowding you, she's taking up too much of your time, you gotta tell her, man. Tell her the timing's bad. Tell her it's not love.
Yeah.
Yell at that.
Oh, does he, Jake? Are you really talking about Billy and this girl he just met and is apparently trying to ghost while she is still in his home? Cool.
Yeah. Also, don't do that. Like, don't give the mostly women who are watching this show so-called proof that when a guy is acting like he doesn't care, it's because he's masking deep feelings of, like, fear of rejection.
Yep.
It is literally never that. He's ghosting you because he doesn't care. Find someone who does. They're out there.
Yep.
Also, please, TV and movies, stop doing that thing where someone goes in, offers to, like, buy everyone a beer, which is never named, drinks, like, two sips of it, this from a like starving writer, P.S., and then reaches into his pocket and pulls out exactly enough money to pay for both drinks plus the tip without checking and leaves. Like, I understand that nobody wants to watch this transaction, but find some other way of, like, deliver the line and count the money while you're looking at it. People do this in their lives.
Yes, they do.
God, that bugs me. And
even the actors probably do it in their lives, and yet it never occurs to them to, like, do any kind of little business with it.
Yeah, like, it's
part of the same problem that characters never say goodbye on the phone.
Yes.
Just like the economics of a script just do not jive with real life.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, but you can make them jive. That's your job. It's not like there wasn't plenty of other dead air in this episode.
Yeah.
Which is why I was focusing on little bullshit like this. And I'm like, that painting technique is horrible. Start at the top of the... I mean, so dumb.
So then Billy leaves, and then Jake tries to get Sandy to come home and fuck him, and she lets him down hard. Good job, Sandy, for once. Jake then goes from this conversation back to Jackie's house. Kelly says she doesn't want his money, which is good because he doesn't have it, but that's not what this is about. He admits that he's not always good at expressing himself, but that he's sorry for the way he treated her. And she says it wasn't all his fault, and he does not say that it is, since he's the adult. Instead, he says he doesn't know what there is between them and that he doesn't know what's going to happen, but he doesn't want to lose her friendship. She doesn't want that either. And he invites her to take a ride down to the beach to look at the full moon, and when they're about to take off, she says she has to be home at midnight, since when does Kelly have a curfew, but fine. But he says he does, too, and it's a little cute, but it's also a little dumb because nowhere in anything he said was it like, we can't have a romantic relationship. We need to stop. Like, he's still, everything he's saying is so stringy alongy, even when you say friendship. That's not what she hears.
No. What she hears is, so you're saying there's a chance, like, send a money order and lose her number.
Right. You obviously have the address. You're here.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the episode. So let's close it out by naming our MVP. Libby from payroll, who reported Hal and maybe got him fired.
Sure. I'm also going to say Gay Matt and Rhonda in a tie for like having some lines, but not getting entangled in this super boring episode.
True. Rhonda also looks the best at the pool party. She's just in like a black tank suit and then with sort of like batiky short shorts over it. And granted, she has the waistband folded down because it was the 90s. But other than that, she looks very cute.
Yes, she does.
Least valuable player. I'm going to say the civil servant's gullet because he really was being a dick about a check that he had in his hand and could have given to the person it was meant for instead of being standing on procedure and being a dick about it.
I mean, we're spoiled for choice here, but I will say Allison, like if you are not going to go in your room and watch TV with earplugs and your vibrator, then if you must be out there painting, learn to paint.
Fair enough. And we forgot to tell Dave that we have a user submitted challenge, so there is no musical flourish for this. We will just get into it. Okay.
That'll work.
Samp20181 on Twitter challenges us to list five ways in this episode that Allison shows she's really an 80-year-old woman in a 20-something body. Sarah, you want to start?
Sure. The painting technique looks like she read it in like Country Crafts magazine. No.
Yes. She says harassment because it is probably less dirty sounding than harassment. And that is a very
also,
old lady thing to do
because she served in the Civil War at the Battle of Harrisburg. And that's where your mind goes.
Okay.
I don't know if that was a battle. Sounds like it could have been a Civil War battle site.
Yeah, probably. Sure. Why not?
Sure, why not? She actually has like painting gear, which makes her unique in the history of TV. Usually people just like paint in whatever they're wearing. She has like coveralls, not coveralls, but like generals and a scrunchie to put her hair up, mostly.
Yep. In one of the shots, we see that she has a piece of really ugly butterfly tin art that instead of just looking like a butterfly is painted to look like basically the opening credits of In Living Color in its busyness. And yeah. I'll just say, you know who really loves butterflies? My actual grandma, who is in her 80s. Mm-hmm. So that one.
Yeah. The mantleberries, I'm going to say. Like, that's such an old lady. It's such an old lady thing. Like, do you want some fruit?
Children love mantleberries.
They're nature's candy.
Oh. Hey, we did it. That makes five. If you have more of these suggestions, shoot them our way at AWT90210 on Twitter. Sorry.
That's okay. I have an important update. The Battle of Tupelo, Mississippi, also known as the Engagement at Harrisburg, was a battle in the American Civil War, fought July 14th to 15th, 1864.
Next time on Again With This, more Civil War facts. Also, it's the most hateful time of the
Children
year.
Children love Civil Wars.
Put one in their stocking today. It's our last Christmas with the gang, and Santa is bringing us a long overdue Noah-Donna breakup, an even longer overdue holiday rapprochement between Janet and her parents, and a not-due-at-all Matt Kelly proposal. Mm. Although that should wise Dylan up on getting back together with Brenda, because that's a correction of that crappy retcon that is overdue. Speaking of crappy, you might enjoy our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website, againwiththispodcast.com, and you can view selections from them on our Twitter account. That's at AWT90210. I'm Mysteriously Weightless Paint Can Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Dental School Dropout Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Sexy Headshot David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.